patches. I'm gonna hit you on your face. I'm gonna punch you in your glasses. I'll wear myself a t-shirt that says the world is my ashtray. Our hearts put dust and our hair's all gray. And I just got a message that says, yeah, hell has frozen over. I got a phone call from Lord saying, hey, boy, that's what I'm.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Michael Clare, the Five College Professor of Peace and World Security Studies and Director of the Five College Program in Peace and World Security Studies at Hampshire College. His books include American Arms Supermarket, World Security, Challenges for a New Century, Rogue States and Nuclear Outlaws, Blood and Oil, and the forthcoming book, The Race for What's Left, The Global Scramble for the World's Last Resources. And he's just written a piece at Tom Dispatch, Danger Waters, the Three Top Hotspots of Potential Conflict in the Geoenergy Era. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Clare.
Ian, I'm pleased to be with you tonight.
And since we're ending this new epoch, the Geoenergy Era, explain that concept, if you will, Michael.
Well, this follows from a view that the world's energy supplies are dwindling relative to demand, and they are increasingly located distant from markets because we've used up all of the easily accessible sources of supply near at hand. You have to go further and further afield. So energy has to travel longer and longer distances by boat or by pipeline, and very often these supplies travel through very dangerous areas, areas of instability or piracy or conflict, and therefore they are at risk. So more and more of the world's military powers are going to be focused on protecting these long, attenuated supply lines that are so vital to our economy. I think that's the basis of the new defense policy of the Obama administration and also of the Chinese.
Well, we already see now that where we could be blundering into a war in the Gulf, another war in the Gulf over the Straits of Hormuz, with naval exercises that Iran are going to be conducting next month, along with a joint U.S.-Israeli exercise. You have the Israeli Prime Minister, who is very close to the Republican leadership. He may just attack, in fact, many analysts believe he will attack Iran this year. Whether the U.S. goes along with it or not, it will put Obama in an untenable position. And furthermore, of course, at the very least, the price of energy would go up. So, you know, just one little incident in the Straits of Hormuz at this energy choke point sets off, a bloody encounter, boosts oil prices, and puts the global economy at risk. What could be worse?
I think you described it well. Now, I think that at this point, a lot of what is going on is bluff and bluster for domestic consumption. I think the Iranians' leadership, because of the economic hardships that they brought on their own people, are trying to whip up nationalistic sentiment by talking tough against the U.S. The Americans have to behave in the same way. Obama faces the Republican hardliners who are ready to go to war at a drop of a hat, so they have to talk tough. The Israelis have to talk tough. So a lot of this is for domestic political consumption. However, in that atmosphere, as you say, Ian, a very small incident could get out of hand, could trigger a major explosion. So it's a very dangerous situation.
And Michael Clare, again, the Five College Professor in Peace and World Security Studies at Hampshire College, and he has an article at Tom Dispatch, Danger Waters, the Three Top Hotspots of Potential Conflict in the Geoenergy Era. The other two hotspots, of course, are the South China Seas and the Caspian Sea Basin. Already, of course, not the other choke point for oil going to the east, that's to the Chinese, the growing Chinese market along with the Japanese and Korean market, is the Straits of Malacca next to Singapore there, where they have a problem with piracy, not so much anybody threatening to close the straits. Now, the Chinese have already, they're developing a pipeline from Burma, Myanmar, directly through to China to ease that choke point.
This is certainly true, but the fact remains that China's whole economy rests on its ability to import raw materials from Africa, from the rest of the world, the Middle East, and most of that is going to continue to go through the Strait of Malacca and the South China Sea. Same is true of Japan. They need to have unrestricted access to those waters, and they also, of course, export their products. So their whole economy depends on the safety of seaborne trade. And what the Obama administration is now saying is that the U.S. Navy is going to be the dominant power along these sea lanes. This is how we're going to exercise our power now. We're not going to be a land power in Asia as we were in the Bush administration in Iraq and Afghanistan, but we are going to control the sea lanes and control the economy of China, or potentially threaten the economy of China. And this, I fear, is going to create great anxiety in China and lead to a military response by the Chinese. So it's going to create a very dangerous situation.
So moving from what the Navy calls SLOCs, sea lanes of communications, these choke points, The area of contention is around the uninhabited island chains of the Paracels and the Spratlys, which are claimed by Brunei, Malaysia, Vietnam, and the Philippines, all of whom have got together to negotiate with the Chinese, who, of course, have the dominant claim. Now, of course, into that mix, you have the fact that there has been oil and gas discovered. So explain that particular flashpoint to us.
Well, this is probably the most dangerous area in the world today, in my view, at least so far as the potential for a clash between the U.S. and China, because China claims the entire area of the South China Sea is part of its national territory, and that therefore they have control over shipments of ships through that area and the development of resources. But other countries, like you say, Ian, the Philippines and so on, also claim that area, and some of those countries are allied to the United States, have a defense treaty with the United States, and the U.S. says that this is international waters, doesn't belong to anybody, and that the U.S. believes in freedom of navigation through that area. So there is a potential clash between the Chinese view that this is Chinese territory and American view that this is open territory, and you could have a naval incident occurring there. And there have been. You'll recall that the American anti-submarine warfare ship, the Impeccable, was surrounded by Chinese ships a year or so ago and almost led to an incident. This is what I worry about, that an incident will blow up and lead to something more dangerous.
Well, let's go to the third geoenergy hotspot in the geoenergy era, and that is the Caspian Sea, where you've got a former Soviet republics, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, converging with Russia. I recently talked to somebody in Kazakhstan over the riots that were happening with the oil workers. It turned out that was at a Chinese oil field that they were being mistreated. I know Chevron has been in there from the beginning. They developed the Tengiz oil field. There is enormous energy potential in this area. BP estimates that the Caspian Sea area has as much as 48 billion barrels of oil, mostly in Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan, and 450 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, mostly in Turkmenistan. So how do you rate this hotspot?
Well, this is probably the most interesting place from a geopolitical point of view, because you have not only China interested in extracting all of this energy, you have the European Union and the United States wants to get its hands on it, but then you have Russia, which once controlled the entire area when this was part of the Soviet Union and is very reluctant to see those countries become independent, and now is trying to regain control over the stands, as they're called, Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, what did I leave out, Uzbekistan. The Russians are trying to restore Moscow control over the flow of this energy so that they get all the benefit. So you have a three-way, four-way competition, and all of these countries are supplying arms and military aid to the various parties involved. So this could also potentially be a site of international conflict down the road.
Well, there's no question that that area it has always been a Soviet. There were Soviet republics, and Russia would like to get them back. Stalin, of course, booby-trapped the whole system with, and all the pipelines go all the way through Russia. That's what the Chechen War was largely about. They don't want the only people that are independent. Territorially independent of Russian influence, that extracting this oil are the Georgians, and they've already had a war with Russia. So the writing's already on the wall about what Russia's intentions are. In fact, Putin's his college PhD thesis was on how to maintain economic and political power via oil pipelines. So we know where he's coming from.
Yeah, you're quite right. But now you have China as a player, and that's a new party to this competition. And the Chinese are very interested. As you said earlier, they've bought up oil fields in Kazakhstan. They're buying up natural gas from Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan. They're also moving in military and other forms of geopolitical influence. Sometimes they cooperate with the Russians. They cooperate with the Russians in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is a regional security organization, to try to drive out the Americans. But the Chinese and the Russians are in competitive form when it comes to extracting the oil and natural gas. They don't have the same interest. So you have a triangular relationship, and there's nothing else like this that I can think of.
Well, if sometime this year there's a war in the Gulf, and the first flashpoint that's really heating up, the Straits of Hormuz, that shuts off 20% of the flow of oil to the world, causes a global recession. Of course, Russia will be very happy to see that happen, although their oil fields have been so depleted, and the investment hasn't been adequate. They really don't have the ability that the Saudis have to export extra stuff. I'm afraid we've run out of time here. I thank you so much for joining us, Michael Clare.
It's good discussion. Always great to talk with you.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Clare, the Five College Professor of Peace and World Security Studies at Hampshire College. He has an article at Tom Dispatch, Danger Waters, the Three Top Hotspots of Potential Conflict in the Geo-Energy Era. So what did we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we began with somebody that served in the Clinton White House, who heads up the Democratic Progressive Organization. We were speaking as the New Hampshire primary results came in. Obviously, it's going to be a Romney-Obama race. And how's Obama going to do against somebody who's such a representative of the 1%, such a corporate man as Romney? And unfortunately, of course, Obama's been so nice to the 1% and the corporations that the question is he really going to run a populist campaign? And Mike Luck seemed to think that getting rid of Daley as a chief of staff was a first step in a belated recognition that a lot of the 99% of Americans aren't too happy with how much the millionaires and the billionaires are getting away with everything. So it was an interesting discussion, although it just feels in many ways that the White House response is too little too late, and they've got an awful lot of catching up to do. And then we spoke with Sarah Posner, the senior editor of Religion Dispatches, about her article on Rick Santorum, the GOP's race to the Dark Ages. And she talked about how, obviously, the religious right are flaying about trying to find a candidate, a non-Romney candidate, but it's too late. They did the same thing in 2008. Apparently, they didn't get behind Huckabee and then ended up with McCain. But there's obviously a very pragmatic streak in the Republican Party, given the success of Romney. But she was particularly disturbed by Santorum's notion of banning contraception. But more importantly, she felt that the ABC debate of the Republican candidates really missed the point. The moderators should have gone after Romney on the question of personhood. He signed the personhood pledge, and that's a direct way to undo Roe v. Wade. In many ways, even more insane than Santorum's banning of contraceptions. Again, it comes down to Obama. Is he going to fight for women's rights? Because clearly, Romney's and these other Santorum and company are all on the wrong side of history, and also in the minority. And then finally, I spoke with Michael Clare about his new article about Danger Ward as the three top hotspots of potential conflict in the geoenergy age. Already, the Straits of Hormuz, like they're going to explode at any moment. Then the South China Sea is another one, and the Caspian Sea is another one. Very interesting discussion, and I'll certainly do a follow-up on it. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.